You're tuned to KVNF, Mountain Grown Community Radio. I'm Gavin Dahl. This is Local Motion. This week, we have another reporter roundtable, this time featuring Dennis Webb from the Grand Junction Sentinel. Thanks for joining me, Dennis.
Thank you.
And Lisa Young from the Delta County Independent. Thanks for being back on the show, Lisa.
Yeah, it's great to be with you again, Gavin.
I'd like to start by asking you, Dennis, about the editorial that ran in the Grand Junction Sentinel last weekend entitled "Truth is a Lonely Business." Colorado House Republicans distributed a list of media outlets to their members with contact info, and each outlet was marked friendly or unfriendly. Colorado Public Radio, the Denver Post, 9 News, the Colorado Sun, and others were labeled unfriendly. The Sentinel was one of the outlets labeled friendly, despite the fact I learned from your editorial that Congressmember Lauren Boebert is not speaking with the Sentinel right now. I recommend folks read the editorial for themselves. Let me just ask you, Dennis, more broadly, how does the editorial page work exactly at the Sentinel? If someone reads an unsigned editorial, is it a committee? Is there one specific writer who does them all? How does that work?
I think it's fairly similar to what I've seen at other papers, and I've worked in editorial page work elsewhere. From what I understand, in the Sentinel, Andy Smith is our editorial page editor, so he kind of leads up the effort, but we have an editorial board that includes the publisher, oftentimes managers from other departments. So I think our managing editor from the newsroom is involved, and oftentimes we will have some community, outside people from the community sitting in on that board too. Typically, it's written by the editorial page editor, although he's not there 365 days a year, so on various days, other people are pitching in. Oftentimes, he will circulate his draft via email to others. In my case, for example, he'll send me things when it's something I've written. I think he just likes, as much as anything, to get a fact check in terms of stories I've been writing about, and maybe if there's some piece of insight he thinks I might want to suggest or something that maybe I may think he might be off base on, it, you know, he would get my input. But certainly, reporters are not writing the editorials by any means at the Sentinel, and most papers that I'm aware of, and that's not our job. We shouldn't be having opinions. We should be presenting facts and letting the editorial page writers kind of decide where the paper stands on that.
Well, when it comes to the paper responding to this news of a list of media outlets marked friendly and unfriendly, the gist was truth is a lonely business because you're not in the business of making friends, but you're also not trying to be unfriendly. I think that this whole frame was sort of unnecessary, but let's keep moving. We got a lot of stories we want to cover in this next half hour. Lisa, you have a story out this week in the Delta County Independent about the Hotchkiss Marshal's Office. There's been an ongoing personnel matter involving 2 deputies with rumors swirling in the community, but very little public information. The town is so short-staffed that Paonia officers were moonlighting as independent contractors to help out for, I believe, $39 per hour. I saw your report. But that's ended now, right? Can we recap what we know on this story?
The Hotchkiss Police Department had been, you know, getting some help from Paonia. Again, that did end on May the 15th. Because of what you said, the situation with the 2 officers, I attended the Hotchkiss Town Hall meeting on Tuesday night to kind of get an update on what was going on. And actually, I had sent an email requesting that we get some information, and that didn't happen. I was hoping that Marshal Dan Miller, perhaps the mayor, would give us some kind of an update. Wasn't on the agenda. What was on the agenda was a scheduled executive session, which was canceled. And I think it was due to the fact that there were 2 of the trustees missing from the meeting. They were not in attendance. Perhaps they wanted a full board to go through this personnel issue. And so where it stands right now, the town of Hotchkiss is without 2 of its officers and down to the marshal and 1 other deputy at this time.
And one of the things I was wondering that you covered in your story, and I highly recommend folks read this at deltacountyindependent.com, is that you were able to ascertain that 1 of the 2 marshals is on paid leave and the other is on unpaid or suspension. Is that accurate?
That's what I understand. Originally, we reported that they were both on paid administrative leave, but actually, to my surprise, Mayor Larry Wilkening said that 1 of them was suspended without pay. I was surprised by that. That was news to me, my understanding that they were both receiving pay during the investigation. which leads me to think that there's a lot more serious issue going on than maybe previously thought. Again, there are a lot of rumors going around, and it's anybody's guess as to what's actually happening. Hopefully we'll find out soon.
There's also new information. You reported that Kim Shea, owner of Ace Gamble's Hardware in Hotchkiss, caught the adult daughter of the Hotchkiss Marshal allegedly shoplifting in her store. But this one's a stinker. Talk about your reporting on this one, Lisa.
Well, I did receive some information from a very credible source, and I also received in that information the actual complaint that Kim Shea sent to the town. It was sent to the mayor and to the town council. Now, the letter is dated as of May 6th, and the meeting with the town council was May 13th. After the meeting, I spoke to both Marshal Dan Miller and to the mayor as well, and asked them several questions, primarily about what they were going to do on this staff shortage. But then I got around to asking, you know, hey, what's going on? I hear that there's been a complaint filed. I asked both the marshal, who had a complete look of shock on his face. And then I later separately asked the mayor the same question, who just said, I didn't get anything. I didn't receive anything. And I really kind of pushed back a little bit and said, well, that's interesting. I'm getting this from a credible source. He basically said it was rumors. And I said, well, I'm going to go talk to the source. And that's exactly what I did. I went back and talked with Kim Shea about the matter. So I think they're in a kind of a sticky situation right now, and it'll take some time for this to get resolved, but the DCI is going to stay on top of it.
Well, just one last thing here I think is important for people to understand is that when the owner of Ace, in good faith, reported this on, she was told it would be handled, and then there doesn't seem to be any evidence that the daughter of the marshal was in fact held accountable, for example, serving jail time. And then didn't you also report that she was shortly thereafter busted for shoplifting again, allegedly?
Yes, I believe on April 7th, she was arrested again, or busted, however you want to put it, in Delta at the Walmart store. My understanding is, from background information from my sources, is that this is kind of a habit. This has been going on for a while for Ms. Meeks. So I think Kim Shea, the owner of the hardware store in Hotchkiss, has finally had enough. She's told me multiple times that she does not often contact the Hotchkiss Marshals Department when something's going on at her store. She tries to handle it on her own because she hasn't been very satisfied with the response that she's gotten from the marshal or the deputies. So this is an ongoing situation with more background than just this one incident.
Well, thanks again, Lisa. And of course, we should also thank Tom Wills, North Fork Merchant Herald, for his great coverage of issues here in the North Fork on this as well. The public may not learn anything else going on with Hotchkiss until the next council meeting, June 10th. So thanks again for helping us figure out what we can know about this so far. If you're just joining us, this is Local Motion on KVNF. I'm News Director Gavin Dahl. My guests on today's reporter roundtable are Lisa Young from the DCI and Dennis Webb from the Grand Junction Sentinel. Dennis, let me ask you about the Grand Junction Airport briefly. Two airlines have announced new service in and out of Junction, which I believe brings the total to six serving there. I learned from your reporting that that gives Junction Airport a new distinction. Tell us about that. And also, can you remind folks the timing for these new airlines starting up?
Yes. So Avelo Airlines, which is a new airlines, has started up service flying between Burbank and Grand Junction Direct. They're a low-cost airline in terms of the fares. And then Frontier, another low-cost airline, has, I think in June, will be starting up flights between Grand Junction and Denver, I believe, three times a week. It will become the smallest airport in the country as measured by 2019 passenger data to be served by six airlines, according to the airport director. Also be the smallest served by three ultra-low-cost airlines.
I want to shift next to the subject of marijuana ordinances. Quickly, Dennis, is it fair for those of us tuned to Junction News from elsewhere around the West Slope to feel a little surprised that voters in April approved retail marijuana and rejected the slate of conservative city council candidates? I didn't see that coming.
Yeah, I don't know. I think on the marijuana, probably not surprising that it has taken Grand Junction longer than a lot of other places because it is a more conservative city. But I think what they saw happening is that marijuana, retail marijuana, has been coming to other communities. They've been getting the tax benefits of that. I think a lot of their customers are probably driving to places like Palisade and Beck and Parachute from Grand Junction. So that's tax revenue that could be going right into Grand Junction that's the city's missing out on. So maybe from a fiscal conservatism point of view, voters kind of started to think it's time to come on board. And, you know, I think it's also just that retail marijuana has been around now in Colorado for quite a long time. So I think they've had a chance to see how it's gone elsewhere. And certainly there's some people that continue to have reservations, and the majority felt like it's probably time to start dipping the city's toes in the water on that.
And Lisa, can you talk about the Paonia trustees and what they've decided regarding their retail marijuana ordinance?
Sure. At the May 11th meeting, they talked again about marijuana. This was their second time through the ordinance that they were diligently working on for a number of months. They finally came to the place that they wanted to whittle things down a little bit more. Some of the first reporting that I did on the ordinance, which was in the first reading, they talked about having 6 locations and 12 licenses, but that has since been taken down to 3 locations and 6 licenses, which could be, if every location had both retail and the medical, then that would be your 6 licenses in 3 locations. And then the other thing, they had to talk a little bit about what is the definition of a block. And there was some confusion about that. The attorney for the town thought that perhaps they meant you could have, 2 shops, each facing one another right across the street, so to say. But it turns out that will not happen. It will be 1 per block. So nothing across the street from one another. And again, this will probably happen, right on Grand Avenue.
It will be interesting to see if anything changes in our area regarding the growing of the weed that is sold in these new retail shops, not only in Paonia, but Cedar Edge and eventually Grand Junction. And speaking of growers, let's just quickly touch on fruit growing for a moment. Dennis, you did 2 stories last month on potential impacts of freezes. No news is good news on spring freezes, right?
Yeah, I think that's definitely the way to put it. I think the background, it's been a rough, pretty much a year and a half for peach growers and grape growers in the Grand Valley, and I know to some degree certainly in the North Fork Valley as well. There were freezes in the fall of 2019 and a really nasty couple of days of freezes in the spring of last year, and then some more freezing in the fall. And of course, the spring last year pretty much knocked out most of the peach crop in the Grand Valley. And the fall freeze, unfortunately, really some of the damage from that in terms of like tissue damage to the trees themselves, only the growers only could start to assess that this spring. And certainly there were some orchards suffered some pretty serious impacts. But the good news is at least this spring, the weather seems like it's cooperated. And for the trees that didn't get too badly hurt last fall, they seem like, from what we've been hearing from growers, it seems like they're pretty optimistic that they should have a close to full crop.
So good chance that we can all be eating Palisade peaches this summer, for example.
For sure. I should point out, last summer, I guess, some of the local peach shacks, kind of the roadside stands, actually did pretty well. I think the peaches weren't showing up in the major grocery stores, so they were doing great business in some of these small local peach shacks.
Well, speaking of no news, we finally learned just a little bit more at the Delta County Commissioners meeting this morning about the ongoing investigation into the deadly shooting of Austin resident Paige Pierce by an still unnamed Delta County deputy. Lisa, you tuned into the meeting this morning. What did Sheriff Mark Taylor say?
Well, Gavin, Sheriff Mark Taylor showed up to the meeting. He was listed on the agenda. The last time that he spoke, he wasn't on the agenda, but this time they had him on the agenda. He told county commissioners that he attended a meeting on Monday with the 7th Judicial Critical Incident Team, along with District Attorney Seth Ryan. And during that time, it sounds like they kind of went over a briefing of the case, Taylor talked about it as being bits and pieces of things that were previously known by the sheriff's department. So he talked about it being about a 30,000 foot overview of the case. He did announce for the first time that the investigation has been completed by the critical incident team and turned over to the district attorney's office. Taylor said that he will receive a copy of the review. Once he's able to review that case, he'll be able to speak more freely about the incident. However, I still think he is indicating that he would like to wait and maybe team up with the district attorney's office whenever they get to the place that they're ready to announce if there's any criminal charges involved in the case. And along with the investigation by the CIT, Delta County has done its own internal investigation there at the sheriff's office just to make sure that they kind of, you know, dotted their I's and crossed their T's and the things that they were supposed to do. So I think the plan, from what I understand right now, is for both of those reports to come out at about the same time. So look for something around the second week of June. Hopefully we will get the information that we've all been wanting to get. I mean, it's moving forward. That's progress. No details have come out, and I do not know the name of the deputy involved, and we're still waiting on that. I've been waiting on official word, not reporting rumors that were circulating earlier. So we're sticking with that. And you know, tragedy like this involving the police is serious. It was a sad situation, and my heart goes out to the family of both the deputy and the family members of Paige as well. So things are moving and progressing. Look for at least another couple of weeks though before we really know what's going to happen.
Thanks, Lisa. So in Mesa County, Dennis reported late last month that county commissioners have agreed to allow the CPACE program there. Clearly, there are economic development implications, but it is a bit of a new concept, it seems like, to see Mesa County embrace clean energy in this way. Isn't it, Dennis?
Yes, this is the program itself is something of a new concept, and Mesa County commissioners were less anxious than other counties to jump on board, at least immediately. We do have two new commissioners on board now, and one of them, Cody Davis, led new discussions about looking at this again, and he actually has a construction background, so that might explain some of his interest there.
Can you explain for listeners how CPACE will work for building owners there? It's pretty interesting.
Yeah, it's a law created in 2010, and it resulted in the creation of what's called a New Energy Improvement District. Counties kind of have to decide whether they want to opt in on this. Lets commercial building owners finance up to 100% of the cost of energy efficiency, renewable energy, and water conservation projects. They obtain private financing with repayment terms up to 25 years. And the kind of the trick on this is it's you repay through an assessment on the building owner's property tax bill. So that's kind of collected through the county. If the property is sold, the obligation transfers to the next owner.
And so do you see this as something that will gain some traction?
I think clean energy in general, renewable energy, it seems like the costs are coming down in general, and the projects kind of pencil out more and more. I've actually got a solar installer coming up to give me a price on my house tomorrow. I mean, it's kind of at a point where I think it's for a lot of property owners, seems to just make sense to look at this. And I think the feeling was in Mesa County and really among economic development advocates like the Grand Junction Chamber, it sounds like they were getting questions from the business community and hearing a desire that this program, this option be made available. And they're starting to feel like it's an economic tool that other counties have been able to offer now in recent years. And Mesa County was not, there wasn't that ability to offer that in Mesa County. So things are going pretty crazy in terms of new construction and a lot of interest in Mesa County right now. I think, as companies are building, a lot of them will probably be looking towards renewable energy type features. And again, I think the economic development folks see this as one tool in the toolbox. Not everybody will take advantage of it, but it's a nice tool to have.
Back to Lisa, another story you're covering is recycling in Delta County. It seems like the Board of Commissioners and the county manager have actually left a lot of KVNF listeners with questions about what's next for recycling in the county. The North Fork Transfer Station outside Hotchkiss will stop accepting recyclables as of May 26th, I believe, according to signs posted on site. There will be supposedly bins for recycling drop-off in Delta, Cedar Edge, and Hotchkiss, but I don't believe we know specifics on exactly where and how those will work yet. It looks like the county is tripling the cost to taxpayers with their selection of Double J, based in Austin, Colorado, as the new recycler. Can you shed some light on this situation, Lisa? I think people are a little confused about what's going on, and I know that you do such a fair job of covering these things. People are contacting KVNF saying, this stinks, dig into this, and we just haven't had a chance to get there like you have.
Well, I have to agree that it has caused a lot of confusion, and this is a story that I started, was really one of my first stories when I came here in November of 2019, and then when we were doing a kind of a wrap-up of the year 2020, we kind of laughed a little bit about this recycling story. Where does it fit? Because it felt like it wasn't going anywhere. And suddenly it reappeared. And it was surprising. And I think everyone thought maybe it wasn't going to go anywhere and things would just continue the way that they have for the past, 15 years or so. So everyone has been taken a little bit off guard. I don't have a whole lot more information, Gavin, than what I've reported on. That they are going to give this a one-year trial with Double J at $125,000 per year. And there will be recycling bins in Delta, Cedar Edge, and Hotchkiss. And those sites have not been noted. You mentioned a sign that has been posted out at the North Fork Transfer Station. I actually have that pulled up on my phone. And it says, recycling will be moving May 29th to Double J. And then they give their phone number, which I'm going to give out. So if you have questions, folks, call 835-8886 for more information. I was hoping, that the county would be a little more proactive. I guess they have a lot going on, but it would be nice if we could actually get a press release or something that lets us all know exactly where these bins are going to be. Right now, it sounds like if you recycle, you're going to have to take that to Double J. And again, we're still following this story. It's just been kind of, you said, like your listener said, it stinks. It's been hard to find out exactly how things are going to pan out. And I'm going to be pushing to get more information to find out where those bins are going to be, how this is actually going to work, because sticking a sign on the transfer station doesn't seem to be the right way to go about this when people have been upset about the situation, especially in the North Fork. They've held community meetings. They want to keep their recycling there. I think it's time for our county to, step up and get us a little more information. And I guess that was being a little bit opinionated on it.
Well, and it seems like Commissioner Supas has said that part of the reasoning for this is a goal of increasing total recycling so that it's not so expensive to put so much recycling into the landfill, recyclable materials. And there's certainly plenty of room for consumers, for residents to do a better job in sorting, and putting things in the proper place or not throwing the wrong carton into the recycling bin, et cetera. But it strikes many folks as having to go to Austin to do your recycling has very small chance of increasing overall recycling. So like you said, finding out more about these other drop-offs is going to be a big part of that puzzle.
And it could turn out, Gavin, to be a great thing. We've got a year, county's committed to 1 year, and then they will look at this again. During the county commissioners meeting this morning, they're talking about opening up a new cell out at the Adobe Buttes landfill. So that's going to be a lot of money. Maybe $3 million or more to start this new cell out there. So there's a lot of concern about getting as much material out of the landfill that can be recycled. So maybe this will work. I don't want to be a naysayer. I think we should give it an opportunity to see how it works. And we can always, the county can always take a look at it and see if it really did what they wanted it to do, because maybe that is the goal, is to not have to keep opening more cells.
This is KBNF. You're tuned to a reporter roundtable on Locomotion. I'm Gavin Dahl. My guests are Lisa Young from the Delta County Independent and Dennis Webb from the Grand Junction Sentinel. Before we go, I just want to ask you, Dennis, we've talked local, regional, state level stuff. Let's talk national stuff just for a minute here. Bureau of Land Management headquarters moved to Junction during the Trump administration. Now Joe Biden is nominating Tracy Stone Manning, a conservation policy expert at the National Wildlife Federation, to serve as his BLM director. You've done a couple of stories on this. What should listeners know about her, and what's the potential impact for Grand Junction?
Yeah, she currently, or her last job has been at the National Wildlife Federation, and she previously worked at an environmental organization in Montana, and after that, she had held staff positions for Senator John Tester, a Montana Democrat, and then for the former Montana Governor Steve Bullock, also a Democrat, where she was his director of Department of Environmental Quality and I think chief of staff at one point. What's interesting, you know, the BLM story for us that we track more closely than anything has been the status of the headquarters. And she, just like Deb Haaland, the new Interior Secretary, and also like Nada Culver, who's the has a deputy position now at the BLM, deputy director position, all three of them in their prior capacities had been critical of moving the headquarters to Grand Junction. So just from the standpoint of the question mark over the future of that headquarters and whether the Biden administration may reconsider that and pull jobs back to Washington, that's something we're watching very closely, and I'm sure there'll be a question that she's asked about during her confirmation hearing to be BLM director, just as it was asked of Deb Haaland. So we'll be watching closely. I think Deb Haaland has been pretty clear she doesn't want to make some kind of knee-jerk immediate move that's not considering the BLM employees who have been through a lot already over the last year. I don't think there's a feeling it was a lot to put them through when the jobs were moved out west, and to just turn around and yank the jobs back to Washington. There needs to be a closer look at all that before they do anything that's not thought through fully.
And interesting to note that, of course, the congressional delegation from Colorado, the governor, are in favor of the BLM being here. And so it's not strictly a partisan topic, right? Whether the BLM headquarters should stay in Junction. And so, like you mentioned, the new head of the Department of the Interior and now this nominee for BLM, obviously Democrats, they may be impacted in their decision-making by what our senators and members of Congress and governor are saying here in Colorado, but we'll have to wait and see. We know Dennis Webb will report on it for the Grand Junction Sentinel when it happens, and we're going to have to leave it there. Dennis, your work is online at gjsentinel.com. Thanks for speaking with KVNF.
Oh, thank you. I really appreciate the time.
And Lisa Young, her work is online at deltacountyindependent.com. Great to have you back on the show again, Lisa. Thank you.
Thank you, Gavin. It was a pleasure to be with you today.
I'm Gavin Dahl. This is KVNF. Thanks for listening.